So here's the question. In the print and packaging supply chain, how do we deliver new ideas and innovative practices to continually improve your profit, your brand, and your quality? Welcome to the Gamut Podcast, and I am your host, Jeff Collins, Director of Print Technologies for ID Alliance. We are a nonprofit global think tank serving the graphic communications industry with 12 offices strategically located around the world to better support our membership. You can support the Gamut Podcast and content like this by becoming a member at ID Alliance by going to www.idalliance.org. This episode's sponsor is Drupa, the number one trade fair for printing technologies held from June 16th through June 26th, 2020 in Dusseldorf, Germany. With 1,800 exhibitors from more than 50 nations and 260,000 visitors from around the world, Drupa underscores that it's the most relevant and important platform for the global print industry. The event is renowned for its wide range of products and international reach, reflecting the status of the industry with the latest technologies and trends. The motto for the 11-day event is Embrace the Future, focusing on education, engagement, and entertainment in an inspiring atmosphere. In a time of continuous change and transformation, Drupa 2020 is the industry's must-attend event. It provides guidance, important stimulus for sustainable and future-oriented business models, and offers a unique setting for networking. Drupa 2020 will be accompanied by a high-caliber ancillary program with renowned international speakers and the special forums Drupa Cube, Drupa DNA, Touchpoint Packaging, and Touchpoint 3D Fab plus Print. These will provide crucial information and inspiration. Visit the Drupa website at www.drupa.com for the latest exhibitor list, news, and tickets at reduced rates. On today's Gamut Podcast, we're speaking with Peter Pretzer of Fujifilm North America. And Peter has been in the printing industry for over 30 years. He's held positions in technical sales, management with Fuji, CGS, Innovation Prime Source, and more. And he performs color management consulting throughout North America and Southeast Asia. And Peter's current role, he's the ColorPath Solutions Development Manager. And ColorPath is an award-winning suite of cloud-based color management tools. And we'll talk a lot about ColorPath, as it was one of the first industry solutions to be in the cloud to handle color quality for printers. It covers conventional, digital, large format, and inkjet printing. As well, Fuji will be hosting a G7 expert certification course at their facility in Chicago from April 28th to April 30th this year. So make sure you go to ID Alliance to register for the course if you're interested in becoming a G7 expert. Today, Peter and I will discuss a variety of topics involving ECG, extended color gamut printing, and cloud-based solutions like ColorPath. And Peter, man, it's so great to have you on the Gamut Podcast. And I really appreciate you making the time for us to talk about some really cool things that you guys are doing at Fuji.
Thanks, Jeff. We've got a great team here. We've got an on-site engineer. We've got some excellent technical staff. I'm not the only development manager for ColorPath. I've got a counterpart on the technical side, and I do business development. I've spent quite a bit of time doing color management, began in the electronic prepress area on the supply side of things. Prior to that, I was in commercial printing, worked at a Taylor Corp-owned commercial printer in Minnesota. And prior to that, in the newspaper industry, where newspaper I was at did some of the first live PostScript production work.
And that's going a little bit back there, talking about the days when the conversion from analog to digital took place with PostScript. And you had a front seat to that as well. Just want to mention you've been very active over a number of years on the ID Alliance Print Properties and Color Metric Council. And we appreciate that work that you've done there. But going back to the newspaper conversion for into PostScript, tell us about some of the challenges there. That had to have been an interesting front seat ride to a, really the digital revolution in print. And a lot of the people that listen to this podcast, some of our younger folks or people that are new to the industry, may not realize or understand the history and some of the challenges involved with that.
Right. So some of the early challenges were dealing with memory issues as far as leaks and limits of memory. You would build a file and it would print just fine one day, and you go to print it the next day and it would kill the rip. Right. Other things were waiting for 32-bit color to come on. We tried to do separations. It was difficult to do. I started with Adobe Illustrator 1.1 and a pre-release version of Quark Express.
Right.
So, you know, all the things that getting people trained, moving over from older photo typesetting, just being responsible for storage and backup, and all the issues that we've come to accept as pretty easy to deal with then were sometimes monumental challenges.
And that's quite a contrast if we look at something like ColorPath, Fuji ColorPath, and look back to the early days of trying to store images and graphics, PostScript files, and pulling things off of mag tapes and SciQuest discs and things like that, optical drives. That is quite a change over the last 20 years to now, where something like ColorPath is able to collect data from multiple devices in real time across multiple plants, really around the world's global solution, because it's in the cloud and you guys can see a lot that's going on as far as quality with those that particular solution. You were an early innovator in the market. And now we, you know, back then nobody knew what Industry 4.0 even meant. And, you know, Internet of Things wasn't a term yet, but you guys were already doing it. I remember using or seeing the data, I should say, some of the data on particular devices, proofing solutions and offset presses that you guys shared with Ideal Alliance back. I think it's around 2007, 2008 when we were studying some things in data sets and trying to understand what the correct tolerances should be for proofing and for offset. I'm going to let you take over. I don't want to belabor it too much, but we would love to hear about how ColorPath got started.
Yeah, early days of ColorPath. So ColorPath originally started as something we called Taskero, which is the Japanese word for help, or a Japanese word for help.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was originally designed to do was show pass-fail. If we set up a color target or a dot gain target for plates, we could measure the results. The measurement results would, that data would go up into the cloud and sit in a database. And then we could use that data to simply get a pass-fail report. We could also then generate reports showing trends over time, comparing devices, comparing shifts, comparing day-to-day measurements.
Right.
So the idea was that I'm able to monitor my devices and find out how well I am, how well those devices and the consumables I'm using are performing.
Right.
At some point, we realized that we could do a lot more with it. So when G7 came along, we also built in the ability to create both G7 and dot gain based curves.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that lived on the Taskero site for a while. And at some point, we said, "Hey, we can do this. We can do this better." We totally redesigned what we were doing, and we came up with ColorPath Sync. And that site sits out there today. We still do G7 and ISO or dot gain based curves.
Mm-hmm.
We also have added to that the ability to create ICC and device link profiles. We not only create the profiles, but we are able to optimize those profiles. So if you think of today's proofing rips where you keep printing out ITA charts and you keep minimizing Delta E, we also do that mm-hmm. in the cloud. So we're not tied to any particular front end. We are able to write optimized device links for any front end that can accept a device link.
So it's device agnostic. I mean, it's a standalone solution that's in the cloud, and adding the, you mentioned the additional features of device link profiles and optimization, all that's happening in the cloud. Not too many people do that. There's cloud-based solutions, but they said, we're going to keep the profiling separate. You know, the buzzword, the Internet of Things, it makes sense to have those capabilities in the cloud on a very secure server that everybody can access through a simple-to-use client they can install on a laptop or even a mobile device.
Right. So we allow you to go in through any browser. You can take measurements. The measurements, we work with pretty much any USB-based measuring device. So those could be handhelds. Those could be strip reading, mm-hmm. spectrophotometers. Again, that data goes up as spectral data to the cloud gets converted to LAB or density or dot gain or whatever the metric happens to be when it lands. And then that data sits there. So you never have to worry about a computer crashing and losing years worth of data. If you need to keep that data mm-hmm. for any reason, it all stays there. We've also worked very hard to make the site easy to use. So we recognize that there may be at a printing company, for example, where there used to be many pre-press operators or even some color experts on hand, those days are long gone. And now the folks who are tasked with getting work out might touch this stuff maybe once every 6 months if they're lucky. Mm-hmm. So we've worked very hard to make the system easy to use. It's kind of wizard based. Once they create a setting, it gets baked into that print condition.
Right.
Next time they call it up, if they need to optimize a device link, for example, or adjust a G7 curve, the settings are all maintained. They don't have to scratch their heads and try to remember what they did before. Also, since it's in the cloud, it gives us a very easy way to provide support. So we can have a technician be viewing the same data that the end user is. And if there are problems, questions about color, we can often suggest a proper course of action in a matter of minutes rather than days. In the old days, we used to have to print out sheets and send those around and measure those with
device
and get our heads together and discuss makes it much easier to support.
And Peter, along the way with ColorPath, what did you guys discover as some unexpected? Usually there's some things that you discover after you collect data in a way that ColorPath does, that you discover something in addition to your original value proposition.
Well, some of the things we found have been exposed simply through the advance and the improvement in technology. So, for example, we sold a lot of this in the early days of inkjet proofing just because the substrates differed so much, the coatings differed so much, the quality of the heads in some of the inkjet printers would get clogged pretty easily. So you had to know if these things were, if the process was unstable or not. What we found in recent years is that as inkjet heads have improved, they've become much more stable. The process is stable now. I don't have to worry about clogged heads and worry about color shifting as much as I used to.
Right.
So now we check, we might take a measurement and find that I don't have to calibrate my equipment nearly as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. So what we found is that this can also save development costs and that I don't, an early thought was I'd have to have an inline spectro, for example, in a production inkjet press to ensure that my color is correct. Rather than spending the money on monitoring, which probably requires slowing the production device down. Mm-hmm. So I'm sacrificing my print production just to know that my quality is good. What we found instead is that the device is stable enough that I don't have to measure every print.
Mm-hmm. And that's always, that's always a big question. The big question that we get from people that are starting to adopt more robust measuring and monitoring routines within their production environment is, how often do I need to calibrate? How often do I need to read this, especially on the digital gear? You'll eventually find out by being aggressive and looking at the data as much as you possibly can that you'll find that sweet spot as far as what the routine should be. And for some equipment, it might be once a week. Some equipment, it might be, every shift.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in a lot of cases, too, we found that the improvement in the inkjet head technology just inkjet, for example, we find that we, once it's calibrated, and typically the only changes we see are required if there's operator error. So it's if somebody submitted the job incorrectly, we catch that then. So what we're doing is we're measuring at the beginning of the job, but we don't have to measure throughout the entire run of the job.
I see.
So I might check beginning and end of the job. If everything marries up, we're good. But I don't have to slow my production process down by taking measurements as we go through the job itself. And that's one of the nice things about inkjet presses. We're able to set up baselines for somebody printing on maybe an electrostatic device, for example. And for some customers, the amount of effort it might take to keep that device color managed, it's not worth it for them. Maybe they're not in a market that requires that much quality.
Right.
For somebody else, though, who is in that kind of market, they know exactly when they've got to recalibrate their device and ensure that they've got a job that conforms to what the expectations the print buyer has set. So we found that it's useful in both high quality and not so high quality situations.
Right.
We're able to set baselines and learn about how well that particular print condition, the performance of that particular print condition for that device.
Peter, can you share with us some of the things that you guys do to, one, assess a new customer before you're integrating ColorPath? What are some of the base requirements, and how do you stand up the solution for someone that's never used this type of a color management or quality approach?
We will typically perform some on-site discovery, where we might send one of our professional service advisors on site and do an audit of the site, find out what the lighting viewing conditions are, lighting conditions, what kind of equipment they have today, the condition of that equipment. And then when I say that, I'm talking about both the output devices and the measuring devices, if those exist, at which point we'll then put together a package that basically takes away the customer's pain. So we find out what it is that is causing them pain and giving them a problem, and we propose a solution that fixes that. One of the other things we had talked about earlier is sending somebody on site and having these professional services available. One of our challenges we found, we've got about 24 certified G7 experts, and we, in a lot of cases, will almost always hang our hat on G7. We find that's a very good way of putting a stake in the ground that is accurate, predictable, and repeatable, and that customers can return to it. So in maintaining about 24 G7 experts within the company, we need to ensure that every one of them is doing things, approaching things the same way. So if we rely on a simple certification training or re-certification every 2 years, that might not do it. So our folks get together typically once a month for training, and then, as we said, the being that it's in the cloud, our tech staff here within Hanover Park can see what they're doing, and again, make sure that if there are any issues, we can get our heads together and find out what's going on. So,
and to shift gears, Peter, Fuji is very gracious with Idea Alliance in hosting several G7 expert certification and training courses at your facility there in Chicago throughout the year, and we have one coming up on April 28th through April 30th. And we appreciate that very much. And I'd love to hear what you guys do there at the facility in Chicago, and tell us a little bit about what they would see if you were a G7 expert student in that class.
Yes. So what we've been doing is we have the luxury of having an Edale Flexo press on site. It's got 6 units, so we're able to do process color and additional spots. But we are able to teach the G7 process on both our J press, which is an inkjet press, and then we prove that process on the Edale press. So we'll teach the concepts on an inkjet device, and we ensure we have repeatable results. So we show that it does work. And then we put it into action live on the Flexo press. So we try to be agnostic in the teaching and say that this process works for any output device. But we do show Flexo-specific issues that come up when we do these things. And we also relate well to the offset crowd. So the guy who, our guy Mike Welpley, who teaches the class, has about 30 years. He's an RIT grad and about 30 years of offset experience. So a wealth of knowledge, and we're happy to provide that for our customers.
And you mentioned a lot of the solutions that you have there at the facility, and the students have access to these. Tell me about some of the things you do in the course curriculum, as far as it relates to hands-on and ensuring that the students, when they leave the class, they're confident that they can go back to their environments and perform the critical things that you need to know to align presses to G7.
Yeah, so anybody who's attended one of these classes knows that it can approach being deaf by PowerPoint. So what we try to do is mix it up, and we go through the G7 concepts as provided in the presentation.
Right.
But then we also, a lot of places that teach this will teach the basics on an Epson, for example, with a rip that accepts curves. And we just happen to have a large format inkjet press about 10 feet away from our Flexo press. So it makes it easy just to flip back and forth between those two devices. So
yeah,
we show how the curves get input. The attendees will do measurements. Each of them will have, we've got a lot of spectrophotometers here. So typically the attendees will each get their hands on either in a group, probably a group of two or three, get some measurements done. We break them up into groups. Everybody, gets a chance to measure and create those curves. And since we've got a cloud-based system, it's pretty easy to log in with a browser. We create a login for every attendee. They go through it and see their own results. Then when we go to prove the process again, we'll start out with the plate creation process for Flexo plates. Those take a little bit longer than offset. So we typically would do those in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we'll do a second run to prove how well the curves work.
You know, Pete, being able to show Flexo calibration is a great asset to have for our G7 expert students. Many of the attendees of a recent class were in Flexo, and we talked a lot about the struggles with minimum dot, that highlight range, extreme highlight range, and Flexo plate calibration. And love to hear your thoughts on that. Some individuals struggle, some printers struggle with achieving G7 because of the poor dot reproduction there in the highlight range. And that causes them a bit of a challenge to match proofs that are targeting Grackle 2013 or even offset companion pieces.
So we're able to set where the minimum dot is in our software. What we also are finding with these plates is we can get down and maintain a 1% dot depending on the substrate. So if we need to improve on the legacy jobs, we can do so. If we need to match the legacy jobs, we can do so.
But you have to start off with a plate that can hold that level of resolution in the min dot.
We're obviously proponents of them getting a new plate that can hold that minimum dot. But yeah, I mean, they need to know how well they're printing, and simply running a P2P chart in a lot of cases will show what they can and can't hold. So, and it depends on the plate. It depends on the substrate. Resolution, all of those things contribute to whether they can or what kind of dot they can hold.
So to, again, shift gears on a different topic that's pretty popular nowadays, and that's extended color gamut printing, and Fuji is in that arena. And you guys have worked on the project to develop a target for ECG at the ID Alliance Print Properties Committee. So we appreciate the work that you've done in studying how to develop that target and participating with several other solution providers. And I wanted to hear from you. I've interviewed several people on this particular topic, and I would love to hear how Fuji is approaching ECG implementation and following some of the standard practices that we have developed in the Print Properties and Colorimetric Committee.
Right. So there are a lot of different ECG solutions out there. Most of them work pretty well to some varying degree. But one of the issues today is that something that, or a print condition that's been characterized on one system or one device by one front end can't be portable. it's not portable and can't be used on another one. Mm-hmm. So there's been a group doing development, an ID Alliance, that is coming up with a standard patch set, a certain size of color chart that can be used and run for ECG. The process is typically, what's recommended is that we use G7 curves for the process colors, and we use something called SCTV curves for the spot colors. So this is a new algorithm, relatively new algorithm, spot color tone value,
yeah,
that gives the appearance of a linear ramp for any color, regardless of the color. So for example, if I take two complementary colors, colors that sit across the wheel from each other, yellow and violet, for example,
right,
if I was to use the same values or a curve on one of those colors, it would look completely different than the other color. So one might look like it's bunched at one end. The other might look, yeah, like a nice linear ramp. This solves most of that problem. SCTV is not a cure-all, but it's the best. At this point, it's the best thing we have, and it seems to work pretty well. It can also be used to do process colors. There's no reason it can't be used for everything, but what we found is it's pretty easy that if I need to drop out those extra channels, I still have a G7 aligned press if I'm only printing process colors. So we use G7 for the process colors and SCTV for the orange, green, violet, or the red, blue, or whatever those additional channels happen to be.
Pete, going back to the discovery and audit process that you do, what are some of the things that need to be in place, or what are the typical things that you find after the audit that the customer needs to know that they need, require before they can implement ECG long-term and sustain it?
Right. So they have to have a modern inkjet proofing device. So some of the ones today also have orange, green, and violet colors in them. So they have a pretty large color space. So they make for a pretty good proofing device.
Mm-hmm.
There are issues with metamerism. The more colors we lay down, the more metameric failure we might see. But we can identify those and as they happen and hopefully be aware when those do come out. Some other things we look for. Well, first of all, the main thing is the front end has to be able to screen for the number of channels that we are going to be running. So if I simply take a standard offset angle, screen angles, I'm going to end up with Marais at some point. So we either need to use a flexo angles at 7 degrees difference, or in the case of offset, we would probably use a stochastic screening.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of flexo, we might use standard screening for the process and possibly stochastic for one or several of the other channels.
Right. And what would be the sequence for the different calibration runs for your CMYK and SCTV or your OVG colors?
We'll first align the press to G7 for process colors. We'll run ramps for SCTV to determine those curves for those colors. We then run a 7-color chart that characterizes that particular printing condition on that substrate with that ink set on that device. And from there, we're then able to create an ICC profile that we can then apply to our wide gamut proofing device. So the front end of the proofing device needs to be able to accept a multi-channel profile. And at that point, we then compare the proofs to the press and determine if we've got a good match or not.
After the proof and press alignment, how are you communicating the range of spot colors or end colors, brand colors that you can target effectively for your client needs?
Well, we simply show them what we can and can't achieve, and it's up to them if they can sell this or not to the brand owners. So even if it makes economic sense to try to simulate a brand color using 7 colors, in a lot of cases, that quality is simply not acceptable. So that's a hurdle that print provider's got to overcome. We have some tools that we've created for simulating spot colors, but these are designed for inkjet devices more than flexo or offset presses. So we find if the brand color or named color that we're trying to hit falls within the gamut of the inkjet device, we can hit it very, very accurately. Not only that, we can predict it very accurately in advance. So it really helps it helps a job planner know what he can and can't hit those brand colors on as far as substrates and devices within his shop.
Right. So,
as far as Flexo goes,
right,
and ECG, that's a little tougher row to hoe. So again, this is not a panacea and there's a lot of hope for this, but this is really going to fall to the decision of the brand owner and print buyer, whether they accept this or not. And I got to think that in a lot of cases, the economics of it will make sense. In some cases, it won't. We are concentrating on the ability to get the customer to a desired printing state with expanded gamut or seven color. And once they get there, we help them write SOPs. We're able to get them there. We produce a report that shows at that snapshot or that point in time, a snapshot of so basically it's a fingerprint of the press that has been aligned to, first of all, G7 on the process side, SCTV with the other additional channels, and then the complete color gamut of what's printable on that particular substrate with that screening.
And I'm sure that with the implementation of ColorPath on top of ECG implementation, you have an excellent way for them to track and record over time, really have awareness from that calibration point on. Yeah.
So ColorPath will record the aims. So what did we hit for solids? What did we hit for overprints? At least as far as the press, the initial conditions are set up. As far as showing variability throughout the all seven channels, we don't do any of that at all. That's typically more of a function of, for example, on our EDEL Flexo press, that's all very well taken care of on each of the units.
I see.
So the units themselves will show how consistently each of those is running.
Right. Yeah. What I was going to say is that you're talking about, essentially the press console is doing the work as far as
As far as process control. So ColorPath is a tool to get there, and then we rely on the press itself, the console, and the capabilities that it has to maintain stability for that run.
And to close the podcast out, Peter, I'd like to understand from Fuji's point of view, or your point of view, the benefit of conducting training classes like the G7 Expert Certification at your site with your equipment. What's the value that it brings compared to maybe some of the other certification programs?
So we see a great value for the customer in these G7 professional and expert certification classes. The main benefit to the customer is that it teaches them to stand on their own feet as far as if there's a shift in color. Once they've set this press up, for example, they've aligned it to G7 specifications. They've got a stake in the ground that they can return to. And they understand what they need to do and what variables they need to check if color does shift on the press. So the main thing it does is it ends finger pointing in that company, whether that's between pre-press and the press room.
Right.
It tends to get everybody on the same page. And it also tends to erode the need for something like a process control where I've got to submit every quarter and prove that I'm doing it. In this case, it comes down to if they have a customer who requires that level of consistency and they can't afford to bounce a job, they're able to fix this or understand that they need to fix it before they run that job. So it's a little less forced process control or forced adherence to a program and basically creating a culture of understanding process control and repeatability and accuracy from the get-go. So more people under that roof that understand those concepts, the better off that customer is and the more profitable they become.
Well said, Peter. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and look forward to talking to you again on the Gamma Podcast.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
All right,
appreciate it.
Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Gamut Podcast. If you have ideas, suggestions, or would like to join us or even sponsor future podcasts, simply email me at jcollins@idealliance.org. That's JCOLLINS@idealliance.org. Take care and have a productive day.